Hey, thanks for dropping by to the Planners on Purpose podcast, created by Naomi Tucker, CMP. Now, this space is for the event planners to encourage and empower you so that you can fully live your life on purpose. So before we dig in, please take a moment to subscribe so you get future shows. Now, here she comes, your host, Naomi.
Well, welcome to the Planners on Purpose podcast. I'm so excited to have you here today with me, but I have a special guest today. It's Keely Belton with the Tailored Approach. So excited to have her here. Keely is a trainer. She is a robust communicator. She's an amazing woman, and I cannot wait for you to hear more about her. Keely, welcome to the Planners on Purpose podcast.
Oh, Naomi, thank you so much. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you.
Me too. So I would love for everyone to hear a little bit more about you. So tell us, where are you based in the world?
Okay. Well, I'm currently based in Oakland, the San Francisco Bay Area. But if you're listening to my accent and wondering where that's from, I'm originally from Cape Town, South Africa. So I've lived in the Bay Area for the last 10 years. Yeah.
That's amazing. And I think that the Bay Area probably has the same landscaping as South Africa or Cape Town. Yes. Is that true?
Absolutely. You know, I kept joking with my husband, if I couldn't live in the San Francisco Bay Area, I would probably want to go back to Cape Town. I've lived in different parts of the world, but I love Cape Town with all my heart. And the Bay Area really reminds me of that, the generosity, the people, the wine country, of course, and the fact that there's so much diversity that it makes me miss home so much less. Can you tell I'm still saying home?
Yes, I can tell. Oh, there's so many similarities. I really can visualize why you picked the area that you're in right now when you talk about wine country, because I know Cape Town has like so many different areas like that there too. So it sounds like you picked the best spot to be able to be home in both places.
100%. Don't tell my husband. I didn't pick him. I picked the place. Oh. He was here, so I came here.
There you go. I won't tell, I promise. Awesome. So it's crazy. So I really want to have our listeners hear a bit about you, a bit about the Tailored Approach and how the Tailored Approach comes to be, because you have an interesting story to your company, and I would love for you to share.
Thank you so much for asking that question. I started my career as an academic. I worked at the University of Stellenbosch in South Africa, which is about an hour's drive outside of Cape Town. And that's where I worked. I was a lecturer. So I was an academic working with undergraduate and postgraduate students. And then I shifted into a different role where I was deputy director of the university's language center. So I was a trainer, I was a leader, I was a coach, and I worked predominantly with corporate companies and public entities. And then, of course, I've lived in different parts of the world. But when I moved to the U.S., I became a corporate trainer with a main focus on communication and leadership. And I've traveled all over the world. I've traveled all over the country, which has been a lot of fun, doing on-site training for different Fortune 500 companies. And that was such a trip. That was a lot of fun, being able to travel 50% of my work time. Then, of course, the pandemic happened. And that's when, you know, everything came to a standstill. All the training, everything was put on ice, everything was put on hold. And I thought, this is the opportunity I need to officially start my own company. Because what I didn't mention, when I moved from Cape Town to Oakland, I had a few clients that I was doing work for. I never officially created my business. It was kind of like a side hustle while I was just hanging out, getting the lay of the land here. And in 2020, I thought, this is the time to create a real business, to stop playing small, to stop thinking, oh, I'll just do this for a while and then I'll move on. And that's how the Tailored Approach came to be. And the name, The Tailored Approach, is important to me because the big thing that I do as a trainer, as a consultant, as a coach, I like to meet my clients regardless of who they are. I'd like to meet them where they are. So instead of expecting them to be in a certain place before I work with them, we talk about where they are, where do they want to go, what do they want to achieve, what legacy do they want to leave, and then we figure out what do they need to do or what do they need to put in place to get there. And that's why the name, The Tailored Approach. I focus predominantly on working with corporate entities, public institutions, and individuals who come to me via coaching. I focus on leadership. I focus on public speaking and effective communication. And then I recently as in earlier this year, I certified as a Everything DISC practitioner, which is a great tool that I use in my business, especially when I'm coaching, because that helps clients understand their strengths and perhaps their growth opportunities or weaknesses, if we want to call them that. And that is helpful for them to get to create that self-awareness in terms of who they are, how they show up, and how they lead.
That's great. And I love calling them growth opportunities, by the way. So I think that's an excellent word. And you just said a lot. There's just so much to unpack. You've had quite the career and quite the journey to come to Tailored Approach. I'm so fascinated by you living in different many parts of the world. And it sounds like you have different languages that you speak as well. How many languages do you speak?
I don't know. I think the older I get, Naomi, the less I count the number of languages, because I always think it's funny. It's that perfectionism thing for me that comes up as thinking, okay, if I don't speak it perfectly anymore, do I count it as a language? Exactly. Do I count it as I can do that?
But I think you count it.
I love that. So the languages that I speak besides English is I speak Afrikaans, which is a South African, it's a Southern African language that we grew up with. And it's funny enough, it's not my mother tongue, contrary to popular belief. My mother tongue is one of the indigenous South African languages called Setswana. And at a young age, my parents, and I love them dearly, but my parents made the mistake of pulling me out of my school and putting me into a school where I had to speak English and Afrikaans. No one spoke Setswana. And this was during the apartheid era. So my parents moved from South Africa, where if there was a lot of apartheid, there were not a lot of opportunities for Black and brown people. And we moved to a neighboring country called Namibia. And that's really where I went to school. And that's where my language skills were formed. So I got into really getting into English, into Afrikaans. And then I also got into German because I went to a German school. Now, through all that, I learned a little bit of French, but just enough to be dangerous. So do not ask me anything. I think when I remember the first time my sister and I went to Paris, it probably took me a couple of days to recapture some of my vocabulary where I felt confident enough to ask for things. When you show up, it's like, okay, where's the hotel? Where do I find this? Where do I find that? Mm-hmm. And that took me a little bit of time to do that. So I would probably say German is the language that I feel most comfortable with. When I went to college, when I went to university in South Africa, that's where I also learned Dutch. I did part of my master's degree in the Netherlands, and all my classes were in Dutch. So I got a deep dive into that, and that's another language that I speak comfortably.
Oh, I love it. I just find that so fascinating. I've learned a lot about you. It's like I knew some about you before this, and then now I'm just learning so much more. So this is really cool. So,
thank you.
So I love your background in communication. And so on this podcast, we have many event professionals that listen, and it's so important for us to be able to have really great communication. Many times we find that we're communicating not only to hotels and venues and things like that, but we also are communicating to like C-level clients as well. So I would love to just hear your thought process on how communication has changed over maybe the last few years and maybe some tips on how we can get better in order to meet where, let's say, the trajectory, where it's going.
Mm-hmm. Happy to. I think the big difference, especially in the last few years with the pandemic and everything, lockdowns, being at home, the biggest thing that people crave today is connection. People want, they want to be connected to other human beings. So instead of looking at communication that, oh, I'm communicating with the masses, we want to focus on connecting with and communicating with one person at a time, regardless of who they are. And what we have to keep in mind is, how do we communicate with different listeners or with different audiences? You mentioned C-suite executives. C-suite executives, they care about the big picture. They care about the bottom line. How much money is it going to cost? So if some of your planners are planning this elaborate, maybe 5-day kickoff meeting, the executive wants to know, okay, how much is it going to cost us? What things do we need to put in place? What resource do we need? What resource are you offering us? Where if you're thinking about other individuals, for example, an engineer or an analyst, they want all the details. They want all the data that you have collected to make sure that you know what you're talking about, and then they want to make their own informed decision. Where the C-suite level, they want the bottom line. They want you to give them recommendations. For example, you say, okay, we have 3 venues, and here's why you should go with venue B. And once you give them those recommendations, they will make their decisions based on what you give them. But they don't want to know that, oh, you know, there are 1,000 chairs in this room and you have to do that and this venue will be okay for this. The rest of their people will be taking care of that, but they really, that's what they care about. So when we are communicating, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is, who is my audience and what do they care about? Mm-hmm. And that's the big shift in community. That's the shift where people are leaning even more. If you want your communication to be successful, you have to know who your audience is. You have to do some research. Even if you don't know the person you're going to show up for an industry keynote, have conversations with a few people, have conversation with the planner, with the HR person, and find out who will be in your audience and what do they care about. Because based on what they care about, some people care about the data, some people care about the storytelling, some people care about the big picture, some people care about the vision and the mission and being inspired to leave that meeting, to leave that event, feeling ready to take on the year, take on new goals, take on new challenges. So that's what I would say in terms of communication. If your listeners can focus on who is my audience, what do they care about, it's already a big win in the right direction in terms of how do I need to show up as a communicator and how do I need to communicate with them.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. And it's so true, just knowing exactly who your audience is and what do you need to communicate to mm-hmm. them, and obviously what is important for them to know. Okay. So important, especially when we're planning internally, planning our events directly, but then also the communication and the marketing messages that we're also projecting out to those audience as well. Is it really speaking to them? And I definitely have seen that shift, especially even in social media as well. People are getting extremely targeted in who they are speaking with. And so it's very, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the big thing is, you mentioned marketing. When it comes to marketing and communication, you want to ensure that your message is consistent. And when you're talking about social media and how people show up, they want to know, Naomi is known for X. This is what she does. Planners on Purpose. This is how I know if I go to a Naomi social media profiles, this is what I can expect. Mm-hmm. And when we don't ensure that our messages are consistent, that we're consistently showing up, that we're sharing the same things, and we can share different angles of the same topic, but people don't want to be confused, because confused people don't buy, confused people don't connect, and confused people will move on to find someone else who doesn't confuse them. And that is all part of the communication.
Yeah. We'll find the people that are speaking directly to us that has that product exactly that we want. And that's where we'll make that purchase or go to that event. So it's definitely key. Thank you. That's really great information. Confuse people to not buy. I love that. So tell us, with all the clients that you've worked with, corporate clients and the trainings that you have done, I would love to hear about what is the biggest struggle that people that you do train have when it comes to their careers in communication?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are so many. If I look at working with corporate companies, I do train in tech teams, and there the struggle is probably around connection, collaboration, and trust. It's helping a team that's intact, especially because of the hybrid work situation where people are not in the office all the time. Think about it. 5, 6, 7 years ago, we went into an office, we connected, we had lunch together. You would walk down the corridor and you would have a quick chat with somebody. You would be in the kitchen making some tea and you would connect with someone. Where now with a hybrid situation, we are not in the same space. So what is lacking might be a level of trust. And a little bit of saying, okay, how do we connect on a deeper level? How do we ensure that when we move into our own spaces, we're still able to not only do the work, but we're still able to maintain that human connection that we all crave and want? And, you know, that's the one thing. But if I'm looking at female leaders that I'm coaching, the biggest struggle for them, besides the lack of job opportunities, the gender gap, I think the big thing, and given a recent poll that I did on LinkedIn, the one that won by, gosh, I think by at least 35% above the others was work-life balance. Women are struggling. Women in careers, they are craving work-life balance. They are craving flexibility. If you think about it, just because you're in a career as a woman doesn't mean you don't have to still go home and take care of everything else, the household, the kids, all the different things that you still have to show up for. And the pandemic has made that crystal clear, the responsibilities, the heavy load, that the double bind that women have to deal with. And so if we can acknowledge the fact that women want to find that balance, and the devastating thing is work-life balance doesn't exist. What women need is flexible work cultures, not work environments, work cultures where women feel comfortable and feeling confident that they can call in and say, hey, today I need to work from home. I have an issue at home, without it becoming a big deal or without it being made into a problem when they walk into a performance review, where if somebody pulls out a binder saying, oh, I see you were not here, you were not able to do this. It's, think about it. How much work do we do? Women tend to work more hours than they should, because we often think that we have to prove ourselves to continue being in the positions we are and to continue advancing in our careers.
I think that is absolutely spot on. And I didn't know if you were going to actually share about that being the biggest struggle, because what you said that you normally do is work on communication with people, and the fact that they are still struggling with work-life balance, it just shows what a global, I think it's just like a global epidemic that we are really experiencing right now when it comes to work-life balance. And in one of my previous podcasts, I did talk about just the perspective of balance, and it definitely isn't, there is no work-life balance, like you said. And it's just a time where you have focus on one areas and a time that you have focus on another, but it's really having that flexibility in our lives that we're able to kind of adjust and tweak as we go. We need to be able to refine and do it differently. And if the companies are able to help with that, that will do nothing but help them and probably help increase the level that women are able to produce and to be their best selves, right?
100%. You know, you are spot on in terms of being in the workplace and having that ability to understand that work-life balance is a myth. What we can do is prioritize different areas of our lives at certain times. Sometimes we prioritize the career because it's Q4, it's crunch time. We have things, projects we have to complete, deadlines to meet. And then we get to the holiday season and we prioritize family and hopefully some rest and having some fun, because that creates a multifaceted person showing up at work who is happy, who is satisfied, and who is ready to show up 100% when the time is right. So the big thing that we need to lean into is flexibility. And, you know, being a communications and leadership consultant and coach, even though I don't focus on burnout like you do, I know that you do that, and you and I have had conversations about that. How I approach it and how I support my clients is helping them get clarity on what they need in a given moment, and then being able to communicate that as clearly and succinctly and confidently as possible without apologizing for the fact that they need a bit more time to do something else this morning.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful. So let's get into that. Let's get into some of those tips that you do give women when they want to develop that confidence to be able to communicate to their leadership and to their organizations on what their needs and what their wants are so that they can be the best version of ourselves. Give us some tips on how you do that.
100%. So the big thing, you know, the framework that I use in my coaching is called the BOLD framework. Mm-hmm. And BOLD, the B stands for breaking through barriers. And those barriers, let me give you the acronym first. So it's BOLD, breaking through barriers. The O is owning our leadership narrative. The L is leading with authenticity. So that means not sacrificing who you are or trying to emulate another leader or another person that you think, oh, maybe that's the way I need to be. And then D, driving continuous change. So let's get back to the B around breaking through barriers. The big thing there is understanding internally what we need, who we are. So that's where I focus on the four core principles of self-leadership. That means self-awareness. So do I know what I need? Do I know where I am? Do I know where I need to, what my strengths and weaknesses and growth opportunities are? And then we move into self-motivation. Am I self-motivated? Do I need others to motivate me, or do I know what I need to do? So that helps them get clarity on understanding what their needs are. So which needs are met, which needs are not being met, and then the needs that are not being met, who needs to meet them? Do I need to meet them as the person? Do I need somebody else? Because what we sometimes tend to do is we will push over the responsibility to someone else and say, well, I'm tired because somebody gave me all this work. And the question is, well, did you advocate for yourself and say, I have 5 projects on my plate right now. I only have 3 weeks before I go on vacation. And asking your manager, which ones do you want me to prioritize? Because we are not going to get to all of them. Instead of saying, yes, sure, I'll take on project 6 and then working day and night to complete that and ultimately burning out. So the strategy there is really getting clear on what your listener needs and then getting clear on asking for help. So one way, the communication piece is, first of all, scheduling that meeting, hopefully face-to-face, whether it's on Zoom, whether it's in person, and saying, hey, I have these projects. I know the results as a business that we're trying to get, but I'm concerned. And I will tell you why. And explaining what is happening, giving clear information, giving 3 reasons why everything won't be able to get done. And then asking the person that you're having the conversation, your manager, and saying, okay, which projects are we prioritizing? My recommendation is that we prioritize the following. So what we're not doing, we're not showing up for that meeting and say, hey, I have a problem. Can you solve it? We're coming to that meeting prepared. We're saying, there is a problem. Here's why it's a problem. and here's how I recommend we solve the problem. And then leaving it up to the manager to give you some guidance, saying, I need an answer by Friday. It's Wednesday today. We're having a meeting. Let me know by 1 p.m. on Friday, and I will adjust or make shifts as needed. So that's the first thing around breaking through barriers. So those internal barriers. And then the O, all owning your leadership narrative. We all have a story to share. And it's important that we start stepping into that story, to claim it, to own it, to tell it, to share it with others and say, hey, this is what I care about. This is what I stand for. This is where I'm the subject matter expert. And leaning into your own strengths. And when you're looking at your growth opportunities, saying, okay, how much longer is it going to take me to get really good at the skill that I'm not good at? Maybe a different way to approach is to say, if I look at my team, who is better at this than me? And it's okay as the leadership, as the one leading and planning that event, to say, I'm going to pull in Susie because Susie is far better skilled at this particular issue. So I'll bring her in. Mm-hmm. So, you know, being really clear in terms of what skills you have, what skills you don't have, and then leaning on your team and delegating to them to their expertise and to their skills, the skill set. And then leading with empathy is very clearly talking about who you are as a leader. How do you show up? How do you show up as your ultimate best? What do you need in order to lead with authenticity? It's that ability to make sure you take care of yourself. You know, that well-being, that wellness. Are you rested? Are you getting enough? So are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting the nutrition you need? Are you getting the exercise that you need? And exercise, it doesn't mean you have to go to the gym and work out for 3 hours. It could very simply be, I'm going to take a 15-minute walk during my lunchtime around the block. That, just getting your body moving, that gives us, again, when you come back, clarity of mind, where you are ready to show up as your best and lead from your place of power instead of leading from a place of disempowerment. Mm-hmm. And then driving constant change is, when we look at women in leadership, women are vastly underrepresented. And that starts right at the beginning. When we look at moving from entry level to manager, mm-hmm. for every 100 men who are promoted to manager level, only 87 women are promoted from entry level to manager. And as you continue on that ladder or on that rung, less and less women are promoted. So by the time you get to senior level positions, there are fewer women to promote. And the change that someone needs to drive, that women need to drive, and men who are allies and sponsors, is that we need women at the top, and we need that culture to change. We need more women to start being promoted from entry level to manager, because when we have more women in different leadership levels, there are more women to promote to higher levels. So in terms of just tips around communication, it's always about knowing who is your audience, being clear on what they care about, because any request that you are going to make, whether it's about taking time off, whether it's about a promotional opportunity, whether it's about a salary increase, you want to be able to throw that over their interests. You want to make sure that it matters to them. So tell them why you deserve that promotion. Tell them how it will make an impact on the business results, on the team, on the projects that are being met. And really, this comes back to being clear on what results you have impacted positively. And that's something, you know, we often as women think that we have to be humble. We have to be careful. We shouldn't be talking or bragging about our achievements and the results we get with our teams. And it's not really bragging. It's simply stating, hey, this is how I led my team to success. You know, we are the marketing team. We are the event planner team. These are the events that we successfully pulled off in 2023. And there has nothing braggadocious about that. It's simply stating, if I had not been here, if I had not been leading my team, would the success have happened?
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I really appreciate you taking us through the BOLD framework. I think that that was just a lot of great information. It's packed and it's awesome. So thank you so much. And I really like the reiteration of being clear. I think that's what I heard loud and clear was being clear with who you're speaking with, being clear about what you want and what your needs are, and being clear in terms of what you want to receive back, right? And when you would like for that to be done. And I love the fact that you talked about just promoting yourself or promoting your business, definitely stating the fact if you did a great job or if you receive an award, it's okay to say, hey, we received an award for X, Y, and Z. Seriously. It's a fact. You received the award.
Yes. So, why sweep it under the rug?
Exactly. Go ahead and share that. So, and that's really helpful with building confidence in the industry, but also building confidence in women. Because even for the event professional world, we do see that we do have a lot of women in this industry. However, not necessarily like you mentioned, when you get up the ranks and get towards the managers and the director level and even VP level and above. So it's great to be able to have that, have this information, because the more we can be clear, the more that we can put ourselves out there, have those conversations with leaders, it really can help open up possibilities for ourselves and for other women coming up. So now I would love to hear about how this framework, I guess, layer in with the DISC method. I know that's something you recently got certified in. I would love to hear about what the DISC method is and how you also use that within your training.
Absolutely. So maybe to just give your listeners a bit of an context around DISC. So DISC is a very popular behavioral assessment tool based on human behavior, and it was developed by a psychologist called William Marston in the 1920s, if you will believe that. Today, the assessment looks slightly different. So there are, and it's a personality-based assessment, and it focuses on four quadrants or four main personalities. And these personalities are dominance, influence, steadiness, and conscientiousness. So each one of these is all about how you show up, how you lead, how you collaborate, how you communicate. So when you're looking at, for example, dominance, someone who has a dominance personality style is often confident, is decisive, is driven, and their communication will be direct. They won't beat about the bush. They will say things as they are, and they won't mince words, quote unquote. So they will just say it as it is, versus someone who is in the steadiness personality, they tend to focus more on relationships. So they will focus on deepening the connection and engaging someone and asking them questions about themselves, where the dominant style is really focused on, okay, we got to get the job done. We have this event coming up. What are the tasks that need to be completed? What's the deadline for each task? Where the influence style personality is more focused on getting everyone to collaborate, to enjoy the work, to talk about what they want and need. So really focusing on the people piece, where dominance will focus more on the task at hand. And so when, you know, steadiness and conscientiousness, the focus there is a little bit more on data, on analysis, on taking your time. And the great thing about DISC is that we don't fall into one specific personality. We have all of them. We're a mix of all of them. And it really depends on the context. It depends on our experiences. It also depends on whether we rested or not rested. So sometimes when I feel energized, so I'm an introvert and you know that. I know you're an introvert. I hope I didn't out you there.
No, you didn't.
Introverts are wonderful. No, introverts are wonderful. And that's why for me, I fall within the steadiness and conscientiousness personality style where I am more analytical. I think before I speak and I think internally, where a dominant person will often speak out loud. They will process by speaking, where for me, I first want to process the information I've been given. And then I will speak up when I have my, ducks in a row. Mm-hmm. So when we pair the DISC assessment with the BOLD framework, is we give every person, we give the client the opportunity to get to know their strengths, to get to know their growth opportunities, to get to know how they show up, and perhaps where they need to flex a little bit more. So we're not saying change who you are. And again, I'm not saying I'm an introvert. I will never be anything other than introvert. I love being an introvert, but I have learned that in certain situations, I have to flex a little bit more into speaking up, into sharing my thoughts, into making connections. If you think about being at an industry conference, mm-hmm. at the conference, you don't want to be the person, the wallflower sitting in the corner. Yeah. You have to be willing to say, okay, I know I get tired from interacting with different people, but maybe I can connect with three people today, and then I will go to my hotel room and take a break, or I will go home and take a break. And that's where you're flexing a little bit into the extroverted realm, or when a dominance person is connecting with someone who's more analytical, who's a thinker, the dominance person knows, okay, if I talk too fast and I give all the information, I'll probably overwhelm my colleague. So I need to pull back a little bit. I need to give them the information and then give them the space to digest, to think it through, and then to speak up when they are ready. Mm-hmm. So these, the assessment tool, the framework, they work really well together, because when you know what your personality is, when you know how you best lead, communicate, collaborate, you know how to lead with authenticity. So you will lean into your strengths when you're leading. You'll focus on your communication style. You'll focus on relationship building. You'll focus on meeting your colleagues or meeting your team or even meeting your clients where they are. So that's what I love about the DISC assessment. It allows you, once you know who you are and you understand the assessment tool, you can start having conversations with different people. And just by the way they are interacting with you, you can take a guess where they fall within the personalities, and you can approach them in your communication in a way that aligns and resonates with them.
Mm. I think that's wonderful. I love the whole premise behind that method, and it really showcases, you know, personalities and what your different, what they, everybody is strong in. I feel like I'm a steadiness person as well. So I think that's great that you're incorporating that into your training, and that you shared how leaders can use it with understanding who they are, understanding who they are leading or talking to as well. You mentioned introversion as it relates to this, but I would love to hear a few more tips about introverts and really how they can communicate best with leading teams and communicating with the C-suite. I would love to know what your tips that you've gathered over the years, other than the ones obviously you just shared.
Mm-hmm. You know, Naomi, probably the biggest thing I would say around introverts is to embrace our introversion. When we get to the point where we embrace who we are, instead of fighting it, instead of thinking, if I could just be more extroverted, I'd be okay. Mm-hmm. That's the number one tip that I give my introverted clients who I still work with. Once you have embraced that, it's understanding what gives you energy and what drains you. As introverts, and I'll speak for myself so that I don't make assumptions, for me, what drains me is connecting with a lot of people at the same time. So being at a party, being at a venue, especially when it's people I don't know, that's very draining to me. And I just the thought of it drains me. So I have to put guardrails for myself. I have to put parameters down and say, okay, how much time am I willing to spend in that environment? And what will I get out of it? So really be clear why you want to do something and moving away from the should, why I should do this. Should is such a loaded word, and it's not necessarily helpful. But if you think about industry events, if you think about holiday parties, can be a lot of fun, but it can also be draining. So for me, when I was still in my corporate training job, I would go to a holiday party and I would say, I'm going for 2 hours. And I typically told my manager ahead of time, I told a few people, so they were not surprised when I said, okay, everybody, happy holidays, I'm out. They were not surprised. They didn't try to talk me into staying a little longer. And that was a big win for me. It's really being clear on what you need and then communicating that ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So that's the one thing. The other, when we're getting into communicating with or interacting, collaborating with your team, maybe communicating with C-suite, is one of the biggest benefits, one of the biggest advantages for introverts are we are good listeners. We really know how to listen. We know how to ask deep and insightful questions. And we also know how to listen for what is being said and listen for what is not being said, you know, kind of reading between the lines and then communicating that back to the person. Mm-hmm. The fear that comes up is that we often hold ourselves back from communicating that back to the person, say, I think I heard you say this. Am I correct? And letting that person say, yes, you're absolutely right. Or no, I this is what I meant instead. So when we are able to lean into asking questions, listening, we have the ability to get to know the people on a deeper level. Our focus is not on getting to know 20 people. Our focus is getting to know one person at a time. That's how we don't get drained. So getting to know every executive. So if you have 10 people on your executive team, getting to build a relationship with each one of them. And it could be something as simple as having a 5-minute conversation with someone and asking them, how was their day? What do they enjoy doing? What did they do this weekend? We live in such a busy world that we forget that those questions are what will connect us. I know for myself as an introvert, I hate small talk. I hate talking about the weather and the little things. Like, I don't care about that. I will say it up front, I do not care. But I do care about what people care about. I want to know what makes you tick. What do you enjoy doing? What's your biggest dream? If you could do anything this weekend, what would it be? And those are the nuggets and the wisdoms of truth that I take with me. So the next time when I'm communicating with an executive, with a leader, I can lean into what they care about because I have built the relationships up front. And that is the strength of introverts, because our focus is on building relationships, on making sure that people are, they are heard, they are seen, they are supported. We can use that data, that information that we have gathered in how we communicate with them. When you know that someone cares about football, or they care, they have 3 kids and they love that their kids love music, you can talk about that and you could bring that element into, okay, we have this event. How about we bring in some music? How about we do this? All the little things, that's how we not only communicate, but that's how we make the people we work with, the people we serve, that's how we make them feel special. And when they feel special, they'll think you are special. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. A conversation I had with a friend a while ago, I asked her, hey, I know you attended this party, you dreaded going, how was it? And so she told me about she talked about the different conversations she had. And then she was like, oh, this one person, it was magical. And I said, oh, what did you guys talk about? And she said, well, he asked me really good questions. And actually, I don't think he said anything about himself. It's like when we take an interest in other people and we're asking them questions, we get to know what makes them tick. That is how we make them feel special. So by the time we're communicating, we know what to communicate. By the time we have to make crucial decisions, we can focus decisions on what matters. So even if you as a leader have to make a decision that is unpopular, because it's not the yes, we can throw this big bash. It's like, sorry, guys, we have budget constraints. We can talk about, but we can talk about why it's small, how intimate it can be, and what we will all get out of it. So really getting into the benefits of the message that you're delivering and what your audience, what your listeners, what the executives will get out of it, instead of focusing, well, I want X, Y, and Z. Is I know you, Naomi, you want X, Y, and Z, and this is how I'm going to help you achieve that.
Yeah, so good. So many great tips. And I feel like a lot of introverts can definitely relate to that. We definitely like to build relationships with other people, be more attuned into what makes them tick and the little nuances about who they are. I think that's where we end up finding our interest and like to stick there and really conversate and expand and evolve, you know, conversation. So it's lean into your strengths and not necessarily expend so much energy trying to be this extrovert. It's really using what you currently have in order to bring out the brightest in the relationships that are around you. So thank you. Thank you. That's some really great tips. I hope everyone's taking notes. This is so good. So thank you so much, Keely. We're wrapping up now, and I would love to just hear from you if there's anything else that you would like to share with our listeners before we wrap up today.
Yeah, well, I'd be happy to say, you know, one of the big things that I've learned in my career is getting to know myself. So if your listeners want to get deeper insight into themselves, I encourage them to take a free assessment. You do get free DISC assessments or the Myers-Briggs. And of course, they are more than welcome to reach out to me and we can talk, we can do a discovery call if that's an interest in looking into how to pair up the DISC assessment with the BOLD framework and help your listeners really lean into their strengths and leverage all their knowledge and their experiences to ensure that 2024 is the biggest year they've ever had. So they can reach out to me. It's at thetailoredapproach.com. And I'd be happy to provide you some links that you can put in your show notes if that's okay.
That would be awesome. I would welcome that. Thank you so very much. Before you head out, I just want to say I appreciate you for being here. This was really great. It was such a treat for me to just listen and just get some tips. And I had my little notebook just jotting notes down as well. But before we leave, we have a closing tradition on this podcast, just to ask a few rapid fire questions about the person that is on. And they're really simple questions. And if you would like to, I guess, delight us in responding to them. Awesome.
Let's do it.
Thank you. So the first question is, what is your favorite genre of book to read?
Ooh, that's an easy one. I love reading crime thrillers and dramas. So it's either crime or it's legal dramas and thrillers.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. It's as you were talking, we have like a little thunderstorm, of course, that's happening right now. So it really kind of fed into the whole crime thriller book that you mentioned. So what is your favorite, I guess, book or author that you like to read within that genre?
I would have to say it'll be Michael Connelly. I don't know if you know the Bosch series on Amazon Prime. I have read every single book that author has put out. I've read all the books. I've watched all the movies of the book remakes, and I've watched every single episode of the Bosch series. So
nice. Yeah, I started reading it a long time ago, but fell off. But I know people that also can relate and absolutely follow every single book. So thank you for that. next is, what is your favorite stress relief technique that you use when you're in the middle of a very, very busy, stressful day?
Oh, yes. I think, you know, if I have 5 minutes, I'll take a walk. If I don't, if I have a minute, I'll do some deep breathing. And it's called box breathing. And this is known from the Navy SEALs. This helps calm my nervous system. When I breathe in for four, then I hold my breath for four counts. I breathe out for four counts and I hold for four and then I do it again. So it's four, 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 four. And I do that four times and that kind of calms me down. It centers my body and I focus on my feet, and we are no shoe household. So I can feel my feet on the ground. And that kind of brings me down where I can focus on the people in front of me or on the high stakes conversation instead of focusing on the voices or the negative self-talk that might be coming up in my head.
Yeah, I love the box technique and I like that you use that. And what's so fascinating about that technique is you can just do it at any time. You can be in the middle of a conversation, like you're saying, in the middle of a podcast, whatever it be, and definitely continue do that technique. So thank you so much for sharing that, because I don't think people know that that's available to them. And it's just a simple breathing technique that actually works.
100%. And it's all about just feeling grounded. That's it. Mm-hmm. You know, once you're grounded, you can do whatever you need to get done.
Absolutely. So finally, what do you like to do to help you unwind? So we're the weekend is here and you just really need to unwind. I think I know what you're going to say, but why don't you share with us what you do to unwind?
I'll share and then you can tell me if I had it right. So the big thing that I love doing besides spending time with my husband and my daughter, Alexandria, I love a glass of red wine and just either reading a book, a physical book, or plugging in my earphones and listening to a book on Audible. Even if I have 10 to 20 minutes, that helps me unwind. And when I'm done, I can come downstairs and be with my family and I no longer am all worked up and needing to be by myself.
Absolutely. See, I did get it right. I got it right. I must say, we are so alike. So yes, that would be one of my things to do too. So I love it. Thank you so very much for just being here, being on a podcast, sharing your expertise, letting us know how we can handle introversion, and just as women, how we can become more confident. This was such a juicy episode. And I just really, really appreciate you being here. So thank you so very much.
Naomi, thank you so much. I really appreciate you. You are a dear friend, and I love the work that you do because you are making a real difference in your clients' lives, in your friends' lives, in the people you love and cherish. So thank you for the podcast. Planners on Purpose podcast is one of my favorites, even though I'm not a planner. I love the juicy content that you tend to share on the podcast. So thank you for having me. It was an honor, and I look forward to our continued collaborations.
My pleasure. Me as well. Have a good one.
Thank you. You too.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode. If you enjoyed the conversation, hit the like button and tell us how much you enjoyed the show by leaving a message in the comments. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.